John Friend.
All right, folks, welcome back to another edition of The Realist Report. This is your host, John Friend. Today is Saturday, September 14th, 2019. Of course, my website is therealistreport.com, where you will find an extensive archive of these podcasts, as well as other radio programs I've participated in. You will also find all of my blog posts and articles, a contact page, my Twitter feed, which is embedded in the right-hand sidebar of the website, and many other useful and important links. I am a regular reporter for American Free Press, America's last real newspaper, and I've also contributed to the Barnes Review, the bi-monthly history magazine affiliated with American Free Press. I encourage listeners to subscribe to these fine print publications. Check out AmericanFreePress.net and BarnesReview.org for all of the details. All right, with that said, I'd like to bring on our special guest this morning. Monica Schaefer, the courageous Canadian dissident and activist, is joining us once again. Monica, welcome back to the program. How are you this morning?
I am very well. Thank you so much for having me on your show again, John. It's always a pleasure to speak with you.
Yes, likewise. Last time you were on was, what, about a month ago or something like that, and we were going to try to do a somewhat regular podcast. So hopefully we can kind of get back into the swing of things and talk about some important topics, including to start off the podcast, I want to focus on the recent 18th anniversary of 9/11, an event that has had disastrous consequences for not only America, but really the entire world. And as everybody listening, I'm sure, is aware, 9/11 was really my big wake-up call, my big red pill. You know, shortly after I graduated college, I moved out to California and started researching 9/11. And I think if anybody does that in an honest way, in an objective way, the official narrative certainly falls apart very, very quickly. And it can lead into some other avenues of research, and you start questioning pretty much everything you've been taught all throughout your life. At least that was the case for me and many other people that I've talked to that have had very similar experiences, including yourself, including your brother Alfred, who I believe the very first time I actually had Alfred on the program, we focused primarily on 9/11 because I know that was a big wake-up call for him as well and for you. So just to kind of get started, what do you have to say about 9/11? What are some of the main points you would make about the event if you were sort of discussing this with maybe somebody that wasn't totally up to speed with 9/11 research or 9/11 truth or some of the, you know, some of these other aspects of 9/11?
Yeah, thanks, John. You're absolutely right. That was the key that opened the door for both my brother and myself. And it was actually 10 years post 9/11 that we started figuring things out. And then it was this basically, you know, go down the rabbit hole and learn that pretty much everything we are taught and everything that we are told by the mainstream media is full of lies. Really, really full of lies. Like, lying was not invented in 2001. But for people who haven't looked into it at all, one of the basic things about 9/11 that you can talk about to you know, bring them up to speed relatively quickly is to talk about the WTC-7, the third building that fell down 8 hours after the Twin Towers did, and that there were, I believe, three major news organizations, for sure the BBC, and I think the CNN and another, they reported that the building had fallen about 20 minutes before it actually fell. So essentially they got their script wrong. They just simply got their script wrong. They erroneously reported it before it actually happened. And that's a smoking gun for that whole event. There was no plane that went into that building. They say it was office fires. Now that would be the first time in history and also the last time that office fires brought down a modern steel-framed high-rise like that. And I mean, there's a lot of people who doubt whether planes hit the other ones, but that's not something I'd like to get into. The main thing is that what they told us happened that day is certainly not the real story of who did it and what actually happened. It was clearly controlled demolition of three buildings that day, and it was the new Pearl Harbor. And that was actually talked about well before 9/11, that, you know, absent another Pearl Harbor type of event, we won't be able to bring in the New World Order. Now, I can't remember exactly whose quote that is. You might know that, John, but they needed a new quote unquote Pearl Harbor type of event to trigger the war on terror. And they did tell us that the war on terror would go on and on and on. It didn't really have an end. And now, who benefits from this war on terror? It seems to be that there is that certain country in the Middle East that we're not allowed to name or criticize them, lest we be called anti-Semitic. So yes. Do you remember who did that quote about the new Pearl Harbor?
Yes, if I'm not mistaken, that came out of the Project for the New American Century, a publication that they had released, I think, in either 2000 or 2001, shortly before 9/11. It was a public policy paper entitled Rebuilding America's Defenses, where they were basically arguing that they needed, as you said, a new Pearl Harbor in order to kind of kickstart and justify their agenda in the minds of the American public. They needed like this public relations type event to kind of kickstart it and to kickstart the official global war on terrorism and to get the United States in not only the United States, but look at NATO. I mean, NATO has been a partner with the United States in these endless wars in the Middle East. They maybe haven't committed as many troops or as many resources as the United States has, but this whole global war on terror paradigm, which was institutionalized. That's really the main point that I always make about 9/11, is the event was used to institutionalize the entire entire global war on terrorism paradigm of U.S. foreign policy and our national security policy. You know, you think about it, you go to the airport nowadays and you got to go through these body scanners, and they've implemented so many tyrannical and just ridiculous policies, all as a result of 9/11. An event that, as you were sort of explaining, if you start looking into the official narrative, I mean, for me anyways, certainly it fell apart so quickly. And that was what was so astonishing to me, is I had really never questioned it. I had never really taken a critical look at the official story. And, you know, back in the day, even now, there's, you know, plenty of good resources, kind of like introductory type 9/11 truth material that you can find online. There's a number of good documentaries and YouTube videos and even articles written about the subject. So, I mean, that was the thing that was so crazy to me, is like, wow, how did anybody believe what the government and media said about 9/11? None of it adds up. There's so many discrepancies. There's so many just ridiculous angles to it. The official story was truly absurd. You know, the idea, as you were sort of mentioning, the idea that planes, you know, crashing into buildings could make them blow up, which is what we see really in the footage, you know, of certainly what happened, you know, in New York City at the World Trade Center towers. I mean, these buildings are blowing up in a controlled demolition manner. That's right before our eyes. But again, you know, it was a very traumatizing event, a very emotional event. The way 9/11, and this was on display every time, you know, an anniversary of 9/11 comes up, the emotional nature of it all, and how the propaganda is used to instill and perpetuate and reinforce the official story. Did you notice that there's all these hashtags, never forget, sort of similar to the fake Holocaust story, which is never again, right? There's never again for the Holocaust, and then for 9/11, it's never forget. So you see this sort of psychological manipulation, the emotional manipulation with the propaganda associated with 9/11, and of course with the fake Holocaust story. It's very it's very powerful. It's a very important aspect and an important angle in understanding how this sort of propaganda works so effectively.
Yes, and you know, I'm glad you brought up the Holocaust, because I wanted to point out also that had they not had such tremendous success with that story that they have, you know, planted into our brains and that, you know, we're not allowed to question and on, they would never have tried to do something like 9/11 and, you know, think they can get away with this. I mean, and, you know, also they tied those two things together very early on, that Michael Chertoff, there's a rather well-known interview that he had. Well, it was a radio show that he was the host on, you know, answering callers' questions, and somebody called in to challenge him about the 9/11 story, and he started spouting off about, oh, this is just like Holocaust denier, just like a Holocaust denier. And thank you very much. Okay, you linked those two things together. That's great. Thank you. I mean, Alfred used that clip in one of his videos to sort of, you know, reverse engineering how they pull these things off and use their psychological warfare against us to make us believe. And, you know, in response to, you know, how can anyone have believed it, including us, when we first were given this story? Because I think in your case also, you didn't sort of realize it from day one either. And for me either, it's because we simply trust and believe what we're told, because we were told all our lives that we live in a free country. We've got freedom of speech, freedom of the press, and our natural instincts are to trust and believe what we're told unless we have good reason not to. And it pretty much, you know, you got to hit us over the head, at least in my case, you know, you over the head with something that demonstrates that, oh, no, our government cannot be trusted. I mean, you know, we grew up with that mantra that our wonderful democracy consists of a government of the people, by the people, for the people. So this is what we believed all our lives. I did, and many others. We're taught that all our lives, and we're taught that we live in the greatest country on earth, at least in Canada. That's what we're always taught. And I think Americans are also taught that everything is great, everything is free, everything is wonderful, and whatnot. And so, you know, you're prone to trusting and believing them. And so then when something like this happens, of course, it's only when you really look at it and say, oh, and some, you know, it could be led by the hand, and that's fine. You know, nobody need to be ashamed that they believed it first, but what people do need to feel shame about is if they're shown the evidence and things are pointed out to them and they still refuse to look. Now that's where I think, okay, that's where you know, people get your heads out of the sand. When things are pointed out to you, take a look. Don't be afraid to look. But, you know, these days, I think you will agree with me that most people know that the official story of 9/11 is complete bogus. And I did take the opportunity a few days ago when it was the anniversary, and I was out and about downtown, and I talked to a few people, and there's lots of American tourists as well. And I had the opportunity to talk to a few of them about this. And they all kind of knew that, yeah, the official story isn't true. Some of them hadn't actually looked into it. I gave them some Architects and Engineers for Truth, for 9/11 Truth materials, and they said, oh, yeah, I'll take a look at this. Thank you very much. So most people do understand that the official story is bogus. But, you know, do a lot of people talk about it all the time? I'm not so sure.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think you're right. I think, you know, and I think Trump has played a huge role in this. I'm certainly no fan of Trump anymore, but I do think it's true to say that since he sort of stepped on the political stage, he's been very effective at criticizing the media, at discrediting the media, and over the course of the past few years, I think it's fair to say that more and more people are thinking critically about what the media is saying. They are turning to the alternative media. They're considering other perspectives. And that's been a very good, a very positive development, a very good thing, certainly for people like us who are concerned about the truth. And So I think that that's true, and I think along with that, there are more and more people that are skeptical of the official 9/11 story. There's no doubt about that, and it's becoming more and more obvious. I mean, even like mainstream. I was actually just reading a couple of days ago. There was a study published by I think it was the University of Alaska, where even like this university is like researching 9/11 and researching the official narrative of the collapse of World Trade Center Building 7, which, as we all know, was not even hit by an airplane, and yet it somehow was blown up on 9/11. And so they did, you know, an investigation into Building 7 and published their conclusions, where they were saying, look, the official story doesn't add up. So there's even more more sort of mainstream organizations and institutions that are coming out and saying, look, there's some serious problems with the official 9/11 story. And you know, that's a very positive development, as I mentioned. But that being said, are we getting any major traction, you know, like in the mainstream media, for example? That's another story. But I think you're right that there are a lot more people that are questioning things, and certainly a lot more people questioning the official 9/11 story, which is good.
I just wanted to mention one thing. It's kind of a sideline topic here, but you had brought up some of these domestic things that happened after 9/11, like at the airports. And by the way, like, not only were they, was their intent to trigger the war on terror abroad, so wars abroad, but the police state at home, not just in the United States, but in Canada as well, and probably lots of other countries, they did implement a whole pile of laws after 9/11 that really are a huge step towards total police state. So these body scanners that you mentioned, I just want to put it out there to people, you do not have to consent to that. You can refuse, and you should refuse, to go through those body scanners at an airport. That is absolutely a bad thing to go through for your body, and you do not have to go through. They cannot force you. I mean, they might, you know, pat you down then, but so be it. If they have to start patting down all those passengers, they're going to be, you know, rethinking their strategies there real quick. And so, and that's just one example. Like, we have to learn that we do not need to consent to all these things that they are doing to us. And that's a key thing right there, that they require our consent. Yeah.
And speaking of that, I'm curious, before I even say what I was going to say about my experience going through airports in the aftermath of 9/11, in Canada, do they have like the same sort of policies? Like, do you guys have like the equivalent of like the TSA at airports, where you have to go through these sorts of machines and this heightened security? Is it the same in Canada as it is in the US?
Well, I don't know if it's exactly the same, because I haven't been, I actually was in New York in April. So in some Canadian airports, they do have those machines, and I simply refused to go through. And then I had to wait aside, you know, I had to wait longer, because then they had to get a female guard to, then they do the pat down, and I don't care. And, you know, I'm not going to let that intimidate me, but I refused to go through that body scanner. And you can too, anybody and everybody, you can simply refuse. And I was telling people going through it, because I was standing just beside the line going through, and they saw that I was standing there waiting. I said, you can refuse. And because they were all, you know, sort of wide eyed, they didn't like the looks of that machine, and they realized, and I said, you don't have to go through there. But like sheep, they went through anyway. I was the only one during that 20 minutes that I was standing there waiting. And I told people loudly, I don't think they liked that very much, but I did it anyway. I just said, you don't have to go through there. Do not go through there. You can refuse.
Good. Well, good for you. And you're absolutely right. You do not have to go through those body scanners. You know, one thing that's clear to me is every time I travel, and I do travel a fair amount, and have, you know, flown all over the country. Any given year, I'm usually on a plane 4 or 5 times at least. So, you know, I'm going through the airports quite a bit, and it is truly a very insulting and degrading experience doing this sort of stuff, because these people, the people that work for the TSA, most of them are non-white. It's a very diverse organization, and it's just a total, generally speaking, it's just a total insult, really. I mean, it's a joke. You know, this is like they act like they're protecting you and they're doing this like super important work when the whole thing is just a total joke. And you're right, you do not have to go through the body scanners. You can opt out, and it usually does take a little bit longer. I've done it multiple times, but lately I've just been going through the scanner just to, you know, speed up the process and just so I can get out of there and get to my gate and hang out and not be, you know, degraded and insulted by these disgusting people. But one point I wanted to make is that not only what was like the actual events of 9/11, you know, we've talked previously about like the dancing Israelis and all the Jewish connections to 9/11, the people that sort of privatized the World Trade Center tower, the people that owned the World Trade Center tower, Larry Silverstein, for example, the people that were actually arrested on 9/11, the dancing Israelis and these other Israeli military and intelligence assets. A lot of them were, in fact, connected to the Israeli military and the Israeli intelligence establishment. These were the only people that were actually arrested in connection with what was going on, certainly in New York, but also at, you know, in other aspects of 9/11. And the mainstream media is not going to tell you about this. They're going to continue to promote the idea that Arab Muslims were behind it, which is, there's really no evidence aside from what the media has presented.
But John, didn't you hear about their passports and stuff?
Yeah. They have like these like scripted stories, this like phony fake evidence that's planted with the, you know, the passports and the photos. It's all such a joke. It's truly an insulting, ridiculous official conspiracy theory. That is what it is. It is an official conspiracy theory that does not add up. That makes no sense. All of the key players involved in it and in the cover-up and the official investigation were all basically Zionists with direct ties to Israel. This has been extremely, extremely well-documented, well-proven at this point. Christopher Bolin, for example, has really been on the case from day one, pointing out these Israeli and Jewish connections to what happened on 9/11. But also another point I was going to make was you know, of course, our foreign policy, you know, the foreign policy agenda in the Middle East, this global war on terrorism, was concocted by Jewish neocons and Israeli military strategists going back to the late 1970s. So this was a paradigm of U.S. foreign policy that they had been advocating for. And again, they needed a new Pearl Harbor in order to kind of kickstart it and justify it and institutionalize it, which is exactly what 9/11 was. But also even like the domestic policy, the TSA, the Patriot Act. I mean, all of this was formulated by Zionists, by Jewish criminals that have key positions of power and influence in the United States. You know, you see stories from time to time about like how the ADL, for example, is training U.S. law enforcement officials at the state level, at the local level, at the federal level. You know, certainly in the aftermath of 9/11, there's been a number of excellent articles written over the years about the Israelification of, you know, like U.S. law enforcement and how we're basically being trained by Israeli police and military intelligence on how to deal with quote unquote terrorism and, you know, lone wolf terrorism and white supremacy. So the whole thing is like this big Jewish racket. The idea of a global war on terrorism, the idea of like homeland security and, you know, fighting, you know, lone wolf terrorism, all of this has been concocted in the minds of these Jewish criminals that use 9/11 to justify all of this. And it's in becoming increasingly more and more obvious and well documented. And that's another point I was going to bring up, is there is still so much good information being written and being published and, you know, being put out there by the alternative media discussing Israel's central role in 9/11. Maybe 2 or 3 months ago, I interviewed briefly, it was like a short 30-minute interview, Philip Giraldi, who, you know, used to work for the CIA. He's a very well-informed, very professional individual that writes for UNS.com, one of the top alternative media websites out there. And even he's out there, you know, talking about Israel's connection to 9/11, these mysterious dancing Israelis and other Israeli spies that were arrested on 9/11. So there's been a lot of good information being put out there. And, you know, this is stuff that, you know, people like us, we've known this for years. But, you know, again, it's getting out there in a bigger way. And that's all very, very good. You know, people are starting to wake up and realize all of these different Israeli and Jewish connections to 9/11. And I think, again, that's a very positive development.
Yes. Oh, you've brought some really, really good points there. You know, as the devil dances ever closer and more wildly closer to the light, the shadows become more stark, and it becomes, the picture becomes more clear. So it's just a little metaphor for what is going on in the world right now. You know, the enemy, which is the Jewish elite, who seek to enslave us all and also depopulate us and seek to mainly, you know, get rid of the European people and European stock people, white people. They are getting more and more brazen with their, you know, attempt to do this, that it is becoming so obvious. And much of the information that we glean is actually from Jewish sources. I say that to people when they doubt, how do you know this or how do you know that? Well, much of our research does actually come from what the Jews tell us themselves. But I wanted to just refer to something that you're talking about post 9/11 with the, you know, in the States, there was the, what do they call it? The Patriot Act or something. And in Canada, there were, there were also laws enacted post 9/11. And one example of a direct result of those laws post 9/11 was the case of Ernst Zundel. You know, before 9/11, they did not succeed in extraditing Ernst Zundel to Germany, which the Jews really, really wanted that to happen so that he could be thrown into the dungeon there. And he basically won his trials, the court cases in the mid-80s or 85 and then 88. And then he was living in the States. And then post 9/11, by trickery, the governments of three countries, that's Germany, Canada, and the United States, conspired to have him basically kidnapped from his home in Tennessee. And then he was sent back to Canada. And under these terrible new laws, he was held for 2 years in solitary confinement in a prison and treated very, very badly, like physically badly. You could call it torture. You know, the lights were kept on 24/7 and other aspects too that made the physical stay very, very uncomfortable. And it was solitary confinement. And they do call that torture after 2 weeks, I think, officially, you know, the United Nations does. Anyway, he went through a trial that where he was not allowed to know who the complainants were. And he was not basically not allowed to see the evidence of those who were fighting against him there. And then he was indeed extradited to Germany after those 2 years. And went through a trial there, and the judge, you know, slapped 5 years on him, the maximum penalty, and he was not let out one day early, not like most other prisoners. They can get let out on half time or 2/3 or whatever. Not so for political prisoners. I don't know of political prisoners who get let out early. Now, maybe there are some, but I don't know. And the ones that I have heard about, nobody gets out early. So there's an example of the post 9/11, you know, the draconian laws that have been implemented in various countries.
Yes, that's a good point. Even Ernst Zundel was caught up in all of this in the aftermath of 9/11. Yeah, that's true. You know what, Monica, there's a couple articles I want to briefly mention in relation to 9/11, and then we can move on.
Yes.
One of which comes from a Jewish publication called The Allgemeiner that I actually sent you a link on Skype shortly before we started doing the podcast. Here's the headline. On 18th anniversary of 9/11 attacks, Israel voices solidarity with U.S. in ongoing fight against global terrorism. And this was a...
What chutzpah? It's chutzpah. Yeah. It's absolute chutzpah.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, exactly. So basically, Israel and, you know, Jewish criminals in the United States organize and stage 9/11 in order to kickstart this fraudulent global war on terrorism that they themselves concocted and again, argued for a new Pearl Harbor, an event that would be used to justify kickstarting and institutionalizing this global war on terrorism, which has been used to basically attack and destroy the nations surrounding Israel in order to pave the way for, you know, Zionist domination of the entire Middle East. We have been fighting wars in the Middle East on Israel's behalf since 9/11. That's exactly what's going on. Israel and the organized international Jewish community have essentially used the American military, the American taxpayer money, you know, our finances to finance this destructive, evil, truly evil and unjustified agenda. You know, literally, we are attacking and destroying some of the poorest countries in the world. I mean, these people are, they pose no threat to us, generally speaking, when they're in their own countries. They have no, most of these people in the, most of these countries in the Middle East, they don't even have like a sophisticated air force or navy to even attempt to attack the United States. Think about it. Why are we over there, thousands of miles away from our own country, from our own families? Meanwhile, we're letting all these people into our countries, some of whom are illegal, and, you know, we can't even protect our border, but we can go fight all these endless wars in the Middle East. The whole thing is just totally backwards and totally evil. That's the main point I want to make. But this, yeah, this article really was a good demonstration of chutzpah on display. And it's just basically a series of tweets. They kind of just highlight and embed some tweets by like the Israeli government, the Israeli Defense Forces, Benjamin Netanyahu, the I think he's the UN ambassador. Or no, I'm sorry, he's the Israeli ambassador to the US, where they're all basically saying, look, 9/11, never forget, right? You know, there's that psychological warfare aspect of the official commemoration and remembrance of 9/11. Never forget. You know, we stand in solidarity with America in the fight against terrorism. Although we're not participating, we'll let America finance and you know, use their military to go out and fight this global war on terrorism, which is doing nothing but advancing our geopolitical interests in the region. It's really incredible. I don't know if you have any comments on this article. I posted it on Twitter as well. If anybody wants to read it, I'll put a link to it as well when I post the podcast. But I read this and was just totally sickened seeing these people just kind of gloat about it almost.
Yeah, John, I didn't have time to look at the article, but, you know, looking at the headline there, I mean, yeah, the chutzpah of them saying, oh, they stand in solidarity when they did it. They did it against their so-called best friend.
Our so, greatest I mean, you, ally, you, right?
Yeah, yeah. You articulated it very well. And so, no, we can move on.
Okay, yeah, no worries. And then there was one last thing, and we kind of briefly touched on it. Like the official commemoration of 9/11 is very similar to the official commemoration of the alleged Holocaust, right? And I'm looking at an article I published on my old blog, johnfriendsblog.blogspot.com. I published this back in May of 2014. I actually took a trip to New York and I think it was April of 2014. And I went down to the World Trade Center Tower area of New York City. It's like Lower Manhattan. They have the September 11th Memorial in the museum. There was actually like a little gift shop that I went into. At the time, the actual memorial in the museum wasn't even totally opened yet. But they have like a, you know, I kind of walked around the area, went to the gift shop and was kind of checking everything out. And I remember writing about it, like I did a review of it. And let me just read briefly some of my thoughts on how the museum and the way they were sort of officially commemorating the event was very similar to how they memorialize and remember the alleged Holocaust. I say here, the more I saw at the 9/11 memorial preview site and heard from the employee who I spoke with, the more I realized that the official commemoration and memorialization of 9/11 is shaping up to be yet another crass commercial enterprise playing on the average American's naivety, gullibility, and emotions. The entire memorial and museum is about raising money, selling official 9/11 propaganda, and remembering and honoring the alleged victims and first responders. And it's basically, I go on to say here, what the Jews are doing with 9/11 is literally the same exact thing as what they've done with the fake Holocaust narrative of World War II. They've turned it into a commercial enterprise, an industry complete with memorials, museums, books, documentaries, official spokespersons, propagandists, etc., that exploits mass audiences psychologically and emotionally in order to maintain and perpetuate entirely false narratives of past events that advance a particular Jewish agenda. And then in this article I'm looking at here, I found another article published by the Jewish Daily Forward where it was documenting and showing that like the 9/11 museum and like the 9/11, you know, memorial industry essentially is being run by the same people who run the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum. A lady named Alice Greenwald, she was the director of the 9/11 Museum when it, you know, was sort of first coming into existence. And so basically the Holocaust industry and the 9/11 memorialization industry is essentially run by the same exact people, and they use the same exact strategies to target us emotionally and psychologically. And I think it'd be interesting to go back to the museum today and check it out, and you know, I could probably even document this even further, but it was essentially the same scam.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah. The same people doing the same show with the same methods, you know, like you say, they get to the emotions and it's somehow very effective. But boy, oh boy, the people are waking up in droves, like especially with 9/11. And basically the people are waking up about a lot of what is going on and that the government is not our friend.
Yeah. And one more point, the National September 11th Memorial and Museum was actually designed by an Israeli architect. And as I mentioned, the people that, you know, sort of run the museum are connected directly to the official U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum in Washington, D.C. So it's basically the same exact racket. 9/11 has been used as like the linchpin of, you know, like modern U.S. foreign policy, international security policy. It's the main paradigm in which the official 9/11 story, anyways, is the main paradigm in which our policy is formulated. And then the fake Holocaust narrative in the official World War II story is the main narrative around which the broader New World Order agenda, the broader, white genocide, white displacement agenda is formulated under. So you see how central both of these fake stories are to this Jew World Order agenda, essentially.
Absolutely correct what you're saying. Those two events are the false narratives of those events, and in the case of the World War II, the Holocaust, that non-event, or it's the wrong. They're identifying the wrong people. They should be saying, yes, the Holocaust on the German people with the firebombing of many cities, any city of it with any population were firebombed with a deliberate strategy to kill innocents, to kill women and children. The strategy was to kill as many Germans as possible. Now, that was the real Holocaust. But yes, both of these narratives are the basis for the structure of the world right now. This, as you say, Jew world order, the new world order, the enslavement of humanity, and you know the Jewish power, anyway, this is going down. It's going to crumble. It has to crumble, this has to crumble. That's why we're fighting so hard.
Yeah. And you know, one final point is you see, you know, people like us that have, you know, we've really like sat down and read about this stuff, researched it, heard all, you know, we've heard, certainly heard the official, you know, sort of establishment narrative of World War II and 9/11. But we've also considered alternative perspectives. And I think if you're doing it objectively, you'd have to come to the conclusion that, you know, the critics are right about the 9/11 story, about, you know, the official World War II story. But it's even worse than that, because you see how literally it's an inversion of reality. Like the official 9/11 story is a total inversion of what actually happened. It wasn't Muslims who were behind it. It was actually Jews who were behind 9/11. Same thing with World War II. It wasn't the Jews who were killed in a Holocaust. There was no official German policy to murder Jews. They basically recognized them as a foreign, very distinct and very hostile ethnic group that was undermining German society. And
they had declared war.
They had declared
war on Germany in 1933. Judea declares war on Germany. I mean, we have
that's a good point. So it needs to be understood that they, as you mentioned, they were the aggressors. I mean, they're the ones declaring war on Germany. They're the ones undermining and subverting and corrupting German society and broader Western society, generally speaking anyways. And they recognized them as this hostile, ethnic faction that was not German, and they wanted them out of Germany. That was the entire policy. There was no death camps. They were essentially labor camps. They were essentially prisons in some cases, detention facilities. Generally speaking, the German government tried their best to care for these people, to provide them with sanitary living conditions. In many cases, these people were paid for their labor. They were, generally speaking, well-treated. They were not abused. Again, generally speaking, there may have been some certain exceptions, but I think it's pretty well documented that their policy was to take care of these people and use their labor for the war effort and to ultimately rid the country of the Jews. And you know, that you could be disgusted by a policy like that. You could be, offended by a policy like that. And that's fine. But that is what it was. It was not this genocidal, agenda to murder these people. That just is not how it was at all.
And John, yes, there were exceptions. Like you say, of course there are exceptions. There are always going to be exceptions. And there were some, abuses. And guess what? The policies that the Germans had in place were so strict that there are at least two German, I don't know at what level they were, but they were, running those camps or generals or not generals, but, they were in the German army, and they were executed by the German army for those abuses. There's at least two that are documented. I know Ursula Haverbeck spoke at length about this. So you see, of course, there's always going to be brutalities and abuses and whatnot, but the rules against that were so strict that they took care of that. Two were executed, at least two. There may have been more that I don't know about. So there you go. I mean, that's how it is. You see,
punished in a court of law, for, harming or mistreating prisoners or detainees in their custody. Sort of the opposite of what we've been told.
Exactly.
It's really mind blowing when you realize literally the official narratives of these two pillars of this New World Order system are total inversions of reality.
So it's quite a lot
to wrap your mind around. Yeah. Let's move on, because we only have maybe 15 or 20 minutes left. And I know you were recently involved in a court case, and I want you to kind of give us the background and as many details as you can. One thing I wanted to mention, somebody from Canada, I can't remember the gentleman's name off the top of my head, came over to my website for last time you were on, and he was leaving a bunch of comments saying that you were going to be in this trial and you were in big trouble. And I didn't publish his comments because they were very malicious and one-sided. Go ahead.
His name is Jim Manella, and I'm sure he's listening to this. He's obsessed with me and what I'm up to, and he really is totally obsessed. He lives here in this town. So, I have also blocked him from commenting anymore. He had many, many, many comments on my website, the freespeechmonica.wordpress. And we gave him opportunity even to do a guest post, but he turned that down. I mean, he had lots of opportunity to comment, and now he's cut off from that, but he continues to spew forth. And he also has spewed forth very publicly, like on social media, on Facebook and whatnot, you know, calls me all kinds of names that I don't even want to say on air because it's just very degrading and insulting. And now in that context, let me just say that. So for 3 years, I've been kind of, attacked, you know, the witch needs to be burned at the stake, so to speak, you know, ritual defamation. And then, of course, spent time in jail last year, 10 months in the gulag in Germany for the little video. Sorry, Mom, I was wrong about the Holocaust. Basically, you know, there is a certain tribe of people who feels very, very threatened by me speaking truth. Okay, fine. Any time I have made a complaint or whatever to the RCMP, that's the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, the federal, it's like your FBI, I guess you could say. They have done nothing. I have not had any time have, you know, they've always said, oh, you know, that doesn't really reach the bar of whatever it is that I'm, you know, complaining about or no, but okay. So not too long ago, I called a local guy. I just said, I think you're a pedophile, but this was to his face. Now this big thing has come of it. He complained and boom, they're on my doorstep with a subpoena or an appearance notice to go to court. So they're laying charges under the Criminal Code of Canada. So suddenly I'm a criminal for calling somebody that I said, I think you're a pedophile. Now this came about after I had, first of all, I'll just give some background. This fellow, and it's not Jim Minella now. We're not talking about him. We're talking about another fellow named Michael Ormandy. He has been around town here since about 2013, I believe. And since then has been on the board and very, very primary figure in the whole LGBTQ stuff, like that whole scene. I don't know, Pride Festival Society or something. And they've been really, really pushing this LGBTQ agenda in this town, big time. And he also is a drag queen. So whenever he does his performances, he gets glorified in the local newspaper, the Fitzhugh, gets absolutely glorified, you know, front page pictures numerous times. Like this guy gets totally glorified for all this stuff. So he didn't exactly come across as a family man to me. And then one day I saw him with a little boy and I was just really concerned about the boy. I had no idea that that was his son. Now, apparently that's his son. Okay, fine. But there was a scene, but he was the one who was making the very loud scene. It was in the shop where he works. And so, you know, they laid charges on me and that's what I was in court for. Now they want this to go to trial. Frank Frost is representing me. And Frank Frost has been in the courts before, and he has evidence of corruption at the highest levels. And he did make it clear that that's what he has done. And so it was clear what is going to happen at this trial. And they want this to go ahead in a trial in December, which is very interesting for us. So, okay, bring it on. Bring it on. Let me just tie this in with something else here. Now, perhaps your listeners aren't aware, if most of them are from the States, I don't know. I'm sure you have listeners from around the world. Canada is in the middle of an election now. An election was called. So we're in the election campaign right now. Now, our current Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, he has been subpoenaed for crimes against humanity for September 16th, 2019. That's this coming Monday, 2 days from now. And he has been subpoenaed to appear along with various church leaders, also the, the Queen's representative in Canada. And because, you know, we are under the Queen. So anyway, this is for various murders and missing children and women through the years in Canada that has taken place along the Highway of Tears and in Kamloops, BC. So now this links all the way to the Queen. The Queen, I'm sure that most people are not aware of this, but she has an outstanding arrest warrant nobody is willing to serve it. The RCMP certainly hasn't served it. And anybody who has tried to serve it, they end up, you know, disappearing into the gulag somewhere. In 1964, 10 children from a native reserve in Kamloops, they went on a picnic with the Queen and Prince Philip, and they never came back. They never came back. It happened again in the 80s, I believe in 1981, 11 children. They never came back from a picnic. Now, witnesses have died along the way, but this, the international, what is it called? The International Common Law Court of Justice in Brussels found the Queen guilty of murder. There is an arrest warrant, which has never been followed through on. Yeah, of course not. She's the Queen. But this exists. She was found guilty of these murders. Okay, so what does that mean for our Canadian court system and the Royal Canadian Mounted Police? Basically, the whole court system in Canada is illegitimate because the judges, the whole court system, they are serving under the Queen, and she is a convicted felon. The whole thing is illegitimate. It is a big game they are playing. And now these are the kinds of things that we'll be talking about. And Frank Frost, he has evidence of the highest level corruption of lawyers working for governments and of several prime ministers of Canada. So anyway, bring it on. Fine, no problem. We will be talking about those things, corruption.
So this is what you're saying. This is all going to be addressed in the upcoming court case, in your upcoming court appearance?
If they want us in that court, then fine, bring it on. Yes, these things will be addressed. And Frank Frost has been in the courts before, and they don't actually like him to be in court because he does talk about these things and is not afraid to do so. And so, yeah, if they want this to happen, well, let it happen, you know, bring it on. And wow. I know they're all listening. There will be people listening to this who will, you know, they monitor your show and they monitor what I'm doing. So yeah, go ahead. You know,
very, very interesting. And, you know, I don't know all the details about, you know, what you're sort of explaining with the Canadian prime ministers being, you know, implicated in this sort of stuff, but it does. I mean, it makes sense. I'll say that because it seems like most of these elite people are totally compromised, especially at the highest levels. It's almost as if you have to be, you know, some sort of sexual predator, some sort of sexual deviant to even make it to the upper echelons of political power in the Western world. I think the recent situation with Jeffrey Epstein sort of proved this to people, demonstrated this to people on a massive scale. I mean, this guy had dirt on everybody. He was connected to all the top players in the United States and many top political players around the world, for that matter. And
yeah.
That was exposed big time with the recent fiasco with him, where he allegedly, you know, dies in prison. I mean, I don't believe that for a second. But people were really skeptical of the official story of that as well.
Absolutely, and the people that are implicated in the whole Epstein affair, I mean, those are the highest level, you know, government and whatnot. It involves sex and children, pedophilia, and child trafficking. So these are the tools with which the elite control us and or our so-called elected leaders is through sex and through child trafficking and pedophilia. And so, you know, this all ties into the whole LGBTQ agenda and what they're teaching in schools in the name of sex education. It's really porno pushing, and it's desensitizing the children to understand and know what is right and wrong and what's normal human behavior and confusing the heck out of children and introducing concepts and ideas into their heads that nobody should be introduced to, let alone children. And this whole thing. Now, I also want to bring in another little part of this story, this SNC-Lavalin huge scandal that's going on in Canada. And there are ties to this NXIVM sex cult, connection to Stephen Bromfman, who is a good friend of Trudeau. And there's a really good video, actually, that I'll recommend to people. It's called Trudeau Subpoenaed for Crimes Against Humanity, September 16th, 2019. That's the name of the video on YouTube. It's 49 minutes long. It is absolutely packed with information that ties some of these things together, and also with China and Canada's very special relationship with China, and how, you know, they have been given exemptions to paying tariffs, and they have been given basically contracts for these huge LNG plants, liquid natural gas plants. So that's at the same time being given special exemptions. So their steel industry, they're going to be, you know, doing things which our Canadian steel industry should be in this. But the corruption is just so deep, and it just all seems to be tied together. And again, it gets tied in with these sex scandals. So, yeah, when you start digging, oh, my goodness, it just.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what, Monica, if you could, I'd like to post a link to that YouTube video. So we'll try to find it after the show, and I'll put it up with this, yes, with this post on my website so people can watch it. I haven't seen the video, but I would like to get that up there so people can check it out and see for themselves. And you're right. I mean, it is incredible how, all of this sort of ties together, and it goes back to these same themes, you know, blackmail, pedophilia, sexual deviancy and perversion. Did you see recently there was a story originally published by Politico, which is like a pretty establishment, sort of mainstream political journal in the United States, very well respected. I think the article originally came out on Thursday, September 12th, and it was about how Israel had set up all these basically like surveillance, like cell phone surveillance equipment, like around the White House, and they were spying on Trump and people connected to Trump. And it was like this big scandal. And it was reporting in the article that the Trump administration found out and didn't even care, didn't even do anything about it. I just, was on Twitter before we went live today, and, they got I retweeted a video of Trump saying, "I don't think the Israelis are spying on us. I really find that hard to believe." So he's basically downplaying it. Israel is, of course, denied it. But let's be serious. We all know that the main country engaging in espionage against the United States is Israel. They have all of our secrets. They have dirt on all of the key players. And that's how they keep these people in line. That's how they always get their way. You know, no matter what, no matter how unjustified, no matter how abhorrent their behavior is, for example, you know, against the Palestinians or against other countries in the region, they just get away with it because they have all the dirt on all these people. And this is how it's done. Espionage, blackmail. You know, I've been reading stories pretty much daily where Israel is like striking Syria. They're striking targets in Iraq. They're targeting Iranian backed militias and Iranian backed groups. So Israel is basically just violating the sovereignty of the countries around them, trying to provoke a war essentially and get the, you know, of course, drag the U.S. into it. So this is a country that's just totally out of control, a totally criminal and rogue nation that we give unwavering support to. Why? Because all of our politicians are totally compromised by these people.
And to bring it full circle, John, Israel exists on the basis of a lie, and that is the Holocaust. I mean, that without the Holocaust, their fictitious story of it, Israel wouldn't exist. I mean, I know there was the Balfour Declaration promising Palestine to the Jews in 1917, I believe it was, and all that. But then they really, you know, they had to get it actually in place, and they did it by deceptive means, and you know, World War II was triggered and started by the Jews, and the Americans were brought in with the Pearl Harbor event, which, you know, anyway, the whole thing is based on and structured on a lie. Its very existence is structured on a lie. So, yeah, to say it's a rogue nation, absolutely it's a rogue nation. And its very existence is structured on a lie. So, yeah, it can't get much more rogue than that, can it?
Yes, no doubt. Well, Monica, we are right at the hour mark, basically. Mm-hmm. Did you have any other comments you'd like to make about anything we've discussed or any concluding remarks before we go ahead and wrap up for today?
Well, I think that we covered a lot of ground, John, and I can't think of anything right now to add to that. Basically, we carry on and fight the good fight for truth and light. That is what we are doing, you know, to expose the liars and the deceivers. And I thank you very much for having me on again, and I hope yes. to talk to you soon.
Yeah, thank you so much for taking the time. It's always great speaking with you. We'll have to do this again real soon. And it was good to talk about 9/11 and to tie in, you know, of course, revisionism and the alleged Holocaust story, and how both of these paradigms are so central to everything we see unfolding today. And, you know, these are crucial points that, you know, you and I both feel very strongly about. And it's very important to tie this all in and to really get this info out, because until we understand this, it's going to be very difficult to make the changes that we need to see. So thank you very much, Monica. I really appreciate it. And I will be in touch, and we'll do this again in the next couple weeks.
Great. Thank you, John. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.